AmericanAlloFarmer.com is a business and a website owned and operated by my friend Liz Tagami and her husband Donald. They live up in Corning, California, and I recently had Liz on the podcast where we got to taste some of her delicious olive oils, both the Arbequina and Ascolano varieties, and they're grown and made right here in California. Well, the oils were really just the tip of the iceberg, because if you check out her website, you'll see that they import gorgeous balsamic vinegar from Modena. In fact, one of them uses three of my favorite Italian wine grapes as the base of the vinegar: Trebbiano, Lambrusco, and Sangiovese. I can't say that without singing. And while on their website, if you sign up to stay in touch, you'll receive their newsletter and you'll get the fantastic recipes that Liz and Donald have created using their beautiful products. I'm so excited to introduce all of you to American Olive Farmer, and Liz has kindly created a discount code for our listeners. Use the code SIPWITHNIKKI, capital S, capital W, and capital N, SIPWITHNIKKI, for $10 off your order, and that can be anything from the site, whether it's delicious olive oils, vinegars, or even gifts. I mean, you can send someone an olive tree as a gift. How cool is that? Check out AmericanOliveFarmer.com and support this fantastic, small, California-based, woman-led business. You can even set up an olive oil subscription. Go, check it out. You're welcome. And in front of my eyes, he made his own schmozé. And you know what? No shade, no judgment. Oh, New Jersey friend, you do you. Drink what you like and like what you drink. But that was a first, and that is not typically how rosé is made. I have to kick off today's episode with a shout out for one of our listeners. Thank you, Mitchell, for supporting the podcast and buying me a glass of wine. I absolutely appreciate it, and I will toast you when I do. If you want to be like Mitchell and support the podcast, there is a link in the show notes to do so. Just be like Mitchell. So this week we're getting back to basics. It is me sitting here with a microphone, giving you some rosé wisdom and helping you make sense of something that has become really popular. And at the time of recording this, it is still summertime here in Northern California, and we have been enjoying our fair share of rosé all day. And I get a lot of questions about rosé, and I think people like the idea of it because it's easy to find, it's generally inexpensive, they're pretty to look at in the glass, but gosh, there's such a spectrum of what can be in the bottle, so much variation. So today we're just gonna keep it simple, break it down, and talk about, first of all, how rosé is made, because that helps you to understand then what are the different flavor profiles so you can figure out what you like. I'm going to give you some tips on, you know, when you're shopping for rosé, what to look for, and answer some listener questions. And then I'm going to give you a real insider tip on how I navigate a wine store and make decisions on what I know my palate likes. You know, how do I buy the things that I think are going to sit in that pocket for me? So here we go with rosé all day. So if you see a bottle of pink wine and you think, oh, I'm going to steer away from that, I don't like sweet wine, the first thing that we need to talk about is that not all rosé is sweet. Now, back in the day, white Zinfandel was very in fashion, and there's still some well-known producers that are making it in the same way. And yes, that does have sweetness. But more recently, and rosé has really had like a surge in popularity, the majority of the ones that you'll find in your local wine shop are actually not sweet. They're most likely completely dry or just have a tiny hint of residual sugar remaining in there. And they are delicious. And the fun thing about rosé is that they can have so many different expressions of flavors, from very fruity like cherry, watermelon, Jolly Rancher, to almost earthy and spicy and fresh on the palate. And there's really a huge variety of them, which makes it so interesting and fun to try. So here's what you need to know about rosé. It is made from red wine grapes. There are not different types of, quote, rosé grapes for rosé wine. For the most part, it's made from the same grapes that you'll recognize from the red wines that you drink, whether it's things like Cabernet, Syrah, Pinot Noir, Sangiovese, Grenache. So we're starting with red grapes, but the reason that rosé can be anywhere on the spectrum from slightly salmon-colored pink to ruby pink and everything in between is that the type of grape and the amount of time that the juice was allowed to be in contact with those red grape skins, that's going to determine the color and also some flavor profile as well. So to make sense of that, let's back up for a moment. So the way that we make red wine is when we pick the grapes, we lightly crush the grapes, and they go into whatever vessel we might be using for fermentation. Most often it's a stainless steel tank. And the skins and the seeds are all in there with the grape juice during that fermentation. Fermentation is yeast, whether native yeast that's already present or yeast that a winemaker has selected and added to the wine. The yeast eat the sugar and turn it into alcohol. Hooray! We love the yeast. Thank you, yeast. But during that time, if it's red wine, the skins are in there the whole time, and that could take 2 to 3 weeks for the fermentation to be complete. So that whole time, all of the color that makes red wine red is extracted out of those skins. And then when it's time to age the red wine in a barrel, which is most common, you press away the skins and just put the liquid wine in the barrel. So if you're setting out to make what we call intentional rosé, grapes that you picked specifically for the process of making a pink rosé wine, it just means that you crush the grapes and you put them in that vessel for fermentation. But after maybe just a couple hours or maybe a day or two max, you're pulling those skins away. So guess what? Since the skin is what gives red wine its color, if you're only leaving that juice touching the skins for a couple hours to a day or two, that's why it only has the chance to get pink. So that's called intentional rosé. That's rosé wine that's being made from the beginning to be rosé. And the time on the skins, also called maceration or skin contact time, that's going to determine how pale to how bold it is. Now, the type of grape that you're doing this with is also going to make a difference, right? So Cabernet Sauvignon, smaller grape, thicker skin, generally has a darker color. So rosé of Cabernet Sauvignon could potentially have more color unless you really only left it on the skins for a couple of hours. So those are the two main things that determine it. And this method of pulling the skins away from red wine grapes to make rosé is probably the most common method. So if you're scratching your head and you're like, oh, I thought there were different rosé pink grapes, or a common misconception, oh, I thought people were just blending red wine and white wine together to make it pink. That is not a thing, except sparkling wine, whether it's champagne from Champagne region in France or sparkling wine from anywhere else in the world. There's sometimes this blending of red grapes and white grapes like Pinot Noir and Chardonnay, but that's really the only time in sparkling wine when you're going to see that. Now, one exception would be the gentleman that was at the next table over from us when I was recently home at a fantastic Italian restaurant in New Jersey with my parents. And he had a glass of wine in front of him, and the color was almost like light brown. And I was like, gosh, I'm nosy. I'm always looking at what people are drinking. I'm like, what is this guy drinking? Until I saw him, because this was a BYOB, bring your own bottle to the restaurant, reached down to his Trader Joe's cooler that was on the floor next to him, and pour himself a half a glass of shall not be named white wine, and then poured a red wine that shall not be named into that same glass. And in front of my eyes, he made his own schmozé. And you know what? No shade, no judgment. Oh, New Jersey friend, you do you. Drink what you like and like what you drink. But that was a first, and that is not typically how rosé is made. For our purposes today, we're not talking about bubbles. That's going to be a whole nother episode coming soon. We're talking about still wine, bubble-free wine, and it is generally made from red grapes. Now, the second way to do this from red grapes is called saigner, which is the French word for blood or bleeding. And so sometimes you'll have producers, and this happens a lot where I live and make wine here in Napa and Sonoma in California. When you are in an area that's really celebrated for red wine production, you can start the process with the intention of making a red wine, but you can saigner or bleed off a little bit of that juice in the beginning stages to make rosé as well simultaneously. Now, the benefit of that is if you're pulling off some of the juice from your red wine that's going through fermentation, it's going to leave behind a red wine that's even more concentrated because there's more skins and less liquid, less juice. And this is why a lot of winemakers will do this saigner. And then it's kind of like, well, I pulled some of this liquid off, so I might as well make a rosé. So that's a different method of making rosé. And that has its benefits as well. What I love so much about rosé is how varied it is, but how versatile it is, especially from a food and wine pairing perspective, because most rosés are going to have that sort of fresh, bright, crisp, lip-smacking acidity, which I've talked about, and you can go back to the episode on food and wine pairing, how that is such a nice balance, especially when you have rich food. But rosé, even any one single rosé in the glass can be a chameleon as far as, you know, if you are having a charcuterie board or if you are grilling and having smash burgers or tacos, because many of them are more subtle in their flavor profile, it makes them more pairable with more things, if that makes sense. And generally, it's inexpensive. Why? Well, if you go back to earlier episodes where I talked about wine economics and why wines cost what they do, the time from the pick to the bottling, right, really drives the cost of production. So generally, the timetable to make rosé is shorter, doesn't take as long. So very often, it's going to be reflected in the price, which is why you can get some killer rosés for under $20. And that's pretty much coming from any wine region around the world, whether it's France, Italy, Spain, California, South Africa, wherever it may be. You really can find some steals. And for this reason, I'm going to encourage you to try many different rosés, right? Because again, we're going through some general tips on how to pick one that you think you're going to like, but they really, really do vary. And I wish it was so simple where I could say, oh, well, if it's a lighter salmon pink color, then it's going to be, you know, lighter concentration of flavor, drier, not sweet, and more acidic. But here's the thing with wine. It's not always linear or predictable like that. So my recommendation, and this is easy to do when we're talking about, you know, $15, $18, $22 bottles of wine, is try many. Go into your local wine store like I did the other day and pull three different ones that are completely different, whether they're made from different grapes or different regions, or just use the color spectrum as a deciding factor and try them and you'll see the difference. You know, generally in a well-stocked wine store, and especially because rosé has been so popular, I'd say, especially in the recent decade or so, just super popular, where you'll see shelves and shelves of it. A lot of it's going to be from Provence, from France. They are just a very well-respected, well-known producer of rosé, and oftentimes it's made from the Grenache grape. Sometimes it might be Mourvèdre or Cinsault or Syrah, but a lot of it's going to be Grenache. And generally, rosé from Provence is going to be that very pale color, but surprisingly can have some boldness and some robustness to the flavor, but oftentimes they're going to be on the drier side and not sweet. In Italy, they call it rosato. In Spain, they call it rosado with a D, just a slight variation. But, you know, the Italians will make beautiful rosato of Sangiovese, Nebbiolo, and even Nerello Mascalese, which if you've listened to the last couple episodes is one of my new favorite Italian grapes from Sicily, Nerello Mascalese. In fact, I am going to put the link in the show notes for a beautiful rosato of Nerello Mascalese from Sicily that is very reasonably priced. It's a $24 bottle of rosé that won 92-point rating from the Wine Enthusiast. The other nice thing about rosés is that they're usually lower in alcohol. And so what we define as lower in alcohol by today's standards is generally 11 to 13%. That's considered lower alcohol by volume. So it just makes them more approachable and usually, speaking for myself, but think this is probably popular belief here. You know, usually we're drinking rosé outside at the barbecue, by the pool, on the boat. So if you really are going for rosé all day, 14 and 15% alcohol by volume will sneak up on you, where 11, 12, and 13% is just going to let you enjoy the lovely, delicate crispness and just be sort of low and slow all day as far as your alcohol content. That's important. There is really a big difference, you know, extrapolated over multiple glasses or a bottle and 12% alcohol versus 14. It does make a difference. So that's one of the lovely things about it. If you listen to the episode where I just interviewed my friend Tony from Covelo Wines in Portugal, he uses the term cheap and cheerful, which I love, and I think that can apply to rosés as well. They usually are cheap and cheerful, inexpensive, and just fun and easy to drink, and that's what we love about it. So we have a listener question.
Listener questions.
And this is coming from Morgan. And Morgan said, I love rosé, but only some. I like crisp, sometimes a little bit drier and bright. So what regions or words should I be looking for to be sure I'm choosing the one with those characteristics? Well, Morgan, it's an awesome question, and thank you for submitting that. And I wish I just had a very simple answer to give you, but like I said, it really is going to vary by the type of grape, the place where it was grown, and the amount of skin contact time, right? So if you like crisp and drier and bright, again, this is not a rule, but generally speaking, some of those lighter color rosés are generally going to be probably more in your wheelhouse because they're probably made from lighter grapes like Pinot Noir, Grenache, versus Syrah or Cabernet Sauvignon, which would be a little bit deeper in color. But here is really the best way that I can recommend. So even as someone who drinks wine regularly, makes wine, is certified and studied this stuff, and even studied in preparation of recording this podcast episode today, the best way that I have found to really hone in on, okay, is this going to appeal to me and my personal taste, is I use the app Vivino. V-I-V-I-N-O. It is a free app. You guys have heard me talk about it before. I wish that I had developed and created this app. I did not. I have no affiliation with them, maybe one day, but I am just an avid Vivino user. So even the other day when I was in my local wine shop, you see me pull out my phone and I'm scanning the labels. And what I think, especially for Morgan's question, what's going to guide you is when you pull up in this app the description of a wine, there is a super helpful section in the description called Taste Characteristics, and it's like sliding bars, a sliding scale about a wine. It's going to tell you from light to bold, and then the second one is from dry to sweet, And the third one is from soft to acidic. So Morgan, obviously you're going to be looking for that slider bar to be more towards the left of dryness, not sweet, and more towards the right of acidic because you like that brightness and that crispness, which are the words that you used. So I find that really helpful because those sliding scales have been developed by regular people, wine drinkers like you and me, who have rated these wines within the app. And that's how they sort of amalgamate all of that data. And I just think it gives a very simple, very easy visual. And you can see, oh, nope, that one, the sliding scale is more on the sweet side. That's probably not what I'm going to like. Or, oh, on the soft to acidic, the slider bar is kind of leaning towards the soft side. So that's probably not what I'm going to like. So my real world answer is once you're aware how rosé is made and the fact that the type of grape, the skin contact, and where the grape is coming from, those will have influences. The other thing, of course, is to use the Vivino app and see what other people are saying. I find it really, really helpful. The last tip too is, you know, we talked about the different regions. Generally speaking, hotter climate regions, Napa, Sonoma, where I'm sitting, are going to yield bolder, richer characters of flavor, not only in the red wines, but also in the rosés that come from them. Whereas cooler climate regions like Austria, Germany, and then even cooler regions like Provence, because temperature is driving ripeness in the grapes and development of flavors and tannins, the climate of the place, and I've talked about this in past episodes of New World wine regions like the US, Australia, South Africa, South America versus Old World, Italy, Spain, France, Germany. While it's changing with climate change, there are still some good guidelines that wines from a cooler climate will generally be a little bit higher in acidity, which gives us that crispness and brightness that we like in wine, versus wines from a hotter place like Australia that is going to have more ripe, more bold flavor, generally a little bit higher alcohol as well because of that. I hope this is helpful. Again, my advice for you is just have fun with it. And because these wines are inexpensive, you can play and try different ones, but keep track. You know, that's the other nice thing about Vivino is when you scan a wine, you can rate it just for yourself. And then you can remember, oh yeah, this was the one I really liked, and, you know, keep track. And that'll help you hone in on what some of the favorites are. Another listener question.
Listener question.
Came from Alyssa, who said, I love rosé. I especially like light and crisp, but not too sweet. Oh, you and Morgan should get together. She said, I would love to hear your favorites that we can find in local wine stores. So yes, Alyssa, I'm going to share a couple of my favorites. And again, I will put the links in the show notes. If you can't find them in your local wine shop, and most of these are fairly widespread, wine.com, which is my partner website, will ship to most states, and they have some great specials right now. So check those out in the show notes. Thanks, Alyssa. A couple of my favorites that you may or may not have heard of. One of them is Gérard Bertrand. That is a French rosé. And I think years ago when I first found it, I'm not going to lie, the bottle intrigued me. It had just a really pretty bottle shape and closure. And it's a blend of Grenache, Syrah, and Cinsault for most vintages, right about 13% alcohol on the drier side with nice crisp acid and usually right around the $20 mark or sometimes less, depending on where you find it. I'll put the link for the Sicilian rosé of Nerello Mascalese in there as well. And then I would be remiss if I didn't shout out one of my favorite local rosés here from Tres Sabores in St. Helena in the Napa Valley.
Sips by Light.
Julie Johnson, who is the owner and winemaker and a mentor of mine, she makes her Ingrid and Julia rosé, which is a blend of Zinfandel and Petite Syrah. And one of the wonderful things about all of Julie's wines at Tres Sabores is that they are a certified organic grower. They use very sustainable practices in making their wine. And this one is interesting because the color is very pale, But because the grapes that are in there, Zinfandel and Petite Sirah, it is a little bit more concentrated in flavor than you're expecting when you go for that first taste. And I love to be surprised by wines, right? I love to think it's going in one direction and then have it take me somewhere else. A lot of times, that's part of the exciting thing about trying different wines. So this one's a little bit more in the style of Provence, but it is from California. And Tres Arroyos Winery is where Michael and I actually make our Solovato, our Sangiovese. They're kind enough to let us custom crush or use space there. So we're there regularly. We're big fans. It's the first wine club I ever joined about 15 years ago. And one day when she stops running in a million different directions, the amazing Julie Johnson's going to be a guest on the podcast. So tune in for that one. I hope this was helpful, and I'm excited for you to start your own rosé journey and see what you love. And do me a favor, when you do, send me a note. Let me know, and I'll try it. So I can't wait to hear about all of the cheap and cheerful rosés that you are about to discover. And I really do want to hear, so send me an email, Nikki, N-I-K-K-I, Nikki, at sipwithnikki.com. Let me know what you find, how did you like it, and also generally just any questions that you have, topics that you'd like to hear on the podcast. I love hearing from listeners. I can't get enough of it. It keeps me going. So send me an email. So we talked about how rosé is made, the tips and the things that you can use on the bottle to help guide you towards what should be a good fit for your palate. And of course, download that free app, Vivino, right now and start using it. Scan, keep track. It's super helpful. Links are in the show notes for the rosés that I mentioned. And I encourage you to go out there and try as many as you can. And whatever's in your glass, whether it's pink, white, or red, as always, sip well.